What people don't realize is that it is perfectly fine to periodically convert a 1031 property that has a large amount of deferred tax into your primary residence. And prior to 2008, when you did that and you lived in it the requisite amount of time, you were able to take the entire amount of the primary residence exemption tax-free.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dave Foster is a 1031 exchange expert. He's also a qualified intermediary and consultant who shares his tax-saving strategies with investors like you who want to maximize their returns. Dave, welcome to the show.
Sam, it's great to be here again. It's been a while since we got together.
Man, it's been since March 16th, 2021 that you've been here on the show. So I'm glad to have you back on the show today. But maybe for our listeners who haven't gone back to March 16th, 2.5 years ago, and listened to that first episode, there are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. So if you don't mind answering them yet again, in 90 seconds or less, tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started with a huge tax bill from the IRS because my other name is Ready Fire Aim Dave. And I bought a duplex in Denver, fixed it up, sold it, and didn't realize that the 1031 was even around. And so I ended up paying a huge tax bill. You want to know how that thing still haunts me to this day?
Sure.
Is that the tax bill would have been about $30,000 30 years ago. If I made 10% on my money for 30 years, what would that look like in my checking account?
I'm going to say $1.2 million. I have no idea. What is it?
I refuse to think about it because I don't want to. It would have been a lot. So that was where I got started, was I discovered that we were going to be able to get to our family's goals quicker by using the tax-deferred power of the 1031 exchange. And so that was how we got there. 10 years into that thing, we were able to buy a 53-foot sailboat and move our children on it and raise four boys on a sailboat with tax-free dollars from 1031 exchanges. And where I am then now today is continuing to reap that and helping other people learn how to do it as well.
So you lived on a 53-foot sailboat for how long?
10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we raised our four boys on it.
Did you sail around the world?
We did not go around the world, but there is so much to see 50 yards offshore. We confined ourselves to Florida, the Keys, the Gulf of Mexico, and the Bahamas, and never got to see even a fraction of them.
I'm sure.
There's so much out there.
I'm absolutely sure. That sounds amazing. So would you say that you're a good sailor?
Okay, there is a truism here. Learning to sail is just like learning to golf. It's easy to learn. It's impossible to master.
And now you know why I don't play golf. That's a difficult game, and I imagine sailing is the same. That's nothing I've ever tried my hand at. But anytime I see it, even on YouTube videos or otherwise, I go, wow, there looks like there's a lot to know there.
Oh, and you know what? You're only seeing the final take, right?
Right.
You're not seeing the 20 takes before that. Because it is so true that any docking you walk away from is a great docking.
It's a great docking. Note to self, if I ever decide to live on a sailboat, I'm going to come calling to you and say, Dave, show me how to do it. You mentioned that while you lived on that sailboat, you used the 1031 exchange to fund that lifestyle. That doesn't make any sense to me. Tell me why I'm wrong. Because in my mind, you take 1031 money and you just roll it over indefinitely. How are you reaping proceeds from 1031 exchanges tax-free?
Yeah, a couple different ways. And that's a great question because it's one of the most powerful parts of the tax code that nobody knows. So the first one is you want to think about the 1031 exchange as a way to compound your investment capital, because you're getting to reinvest not just your sales proceeds minus tax, you're also getting to reinvest for your benefit the tax dollars you get to defer. So just like in my example, if instead of paying the government $30,000, I get to reinvest that $30,000 at 10%, it's going to double every 7 years. And that money then is used to purchase cash flow real estate. And that's always been where my heart is to position myself into assets that throw off cash on a regular basis, because then they're doing the work and I'm not. So we had taken our journey from Colorado to Connecticut to Florida using the 1031 exchange into a fleet of vacation rental properties. And while we were on the boat, those vacation rental properties generated the income for us.
Right.
So that's the first and easiest way. The reason why the boat was tax-free was because we utilized this crossover between Section 1031, which is deferral of the tax on investment property, and Section 121, which is the sale of your primary residence. Now, when you sell your primary residence, if you've lived in it for 2 out of the 5 years prior to sale, you get to take as a married couple the first $500,000
right.
of profit tax-free. And you can do that once every 2 years. But what people don't realize is that it is perfectly fine to periodically convert a 1031 property that has a large amount of deferred tax into your primary residence. And prior to 2008, when you did that and you lived in it the requisite amount of time, you were able to take the entire amount of the primary residence exemption tax-free. So we did that a couple times in Colorado before we went to Connecticut. And then in Connecticut, we converted a rental property into our primary residence. We came to Florida, did the same thing. And each time we sold, then it was tax-free. And that money went to buy the boat then. So that's how we got the boat tax-free. And then lived our lifestyle off of my private clients and the vacation rentals.
So let me just restate what you've said and see if it makes sense to me. If just tell me where I'm getting this wrong. You're rolling over these 1031 properties. You already own one of them. Say it's a rental property. And you say, all right, I'm going to move into that now. And that's going to become my primary residence. And then 2 years after living in that primary residence, you say, bag it. We're going to sell it and head south. You sell that primary residence, and now let's say you've made the maximum amount. Good for you. You made $500,000. You put that in your pocket tax-free, now able to go and spend it. And it's almost a backdoor exit of a 1031.
That's exactly right. Let me tell you the story of a client of mine down on St. Pete Beach who used 1031 exchange to buy three identical, almost literally identical beachfront condos on the same floor of the same building. And then he retired. And after a period of time, he moved into the first one. Now, the rules have changed since 2008. You now only get to prorate the gain. But as soon as he had lived in that, so that he had owned it for 5 years, he had lived in it for 3 years, and then he'd rented it for 2 years. So he moved into it, lived in it for 3 more years. And then when he sold it, he got to take 60%, 3/5 of the gain, tax-free. He paid tax on the rest of the gain. I said, you okay with that? He said, dude, if I was bagging groceries, I'd be paying tax. This way I just go out to my back deck and drink coffee. But where did he move? Next door. And now, so the proration is what's powerful, because you have to own the property for 5 years. But then it's based on how much you've lived in it. So let's say he rents it for 2 years and lives in it for 8. He would get 8/10, 80% of the gain tax free. And then where's he going to move? Into the next one.
Now,
what a great way to do that.
Great way to do it. I love the unique strategy. It takes a lot of patience and some planning, I think, to pull something off like that. But you had mentioned the rules have changed since 2008. What are the nuances since 08, maybe, to that? And if you've already said them and I just missed them, forgive me.
Yeah, well, you used to be able to get the whole game tax-free.
Got it. Okay.
Now you have to prorate it. That's really the big difference.
That's the key. So you have to have owned it for at least 5 years, and only you can prorate the number of years that you actually physically lived in that space.
Precisely. Yep. But still, what a great opportunity as you get towards the end.
Right.
And you're trying to slow down, go more passive.
That's fantastic. I love that. Okay. Hey, you went into some nuance and some detail there. I didn't actually expect, and that's kind of what I was hoping for, because I think a lot of our investors and listeners understand high level 1031. Okay. Like, you know, maybe it's whatever the value has to be lesser. You're buying a bigger property. You use an intermediary. There's all those basic steps to it, I think, that a lot of us get. But when you get into things like what you just mentioned, man, that's really powerful. And I had no idea about stuff like that.
Right. Well, you want to take a real quick test? Let's see how you do.
Let's see how I do. More than likely, right. Now I suddenly retract everything I said about high level understanding, because I think I'm about to get an F.
Oh, no. You're going to do awesome on this test. This is a test on what the four D's of 1031 investing are. Now, I'll give you the first one. The first D of 1031 investing is defer.
Right.
Because anytime you defer, you're starting to compound your profits. Well, that by itself is the eighth wonder of the world. But you can 1031 exchange anywhere in the country from any type of real estate to any type of real estate. So if you're going to sell a piece of real estate, no matter where you want to go or what you want to invest in, you do the 1031 and defer.
Sure.
What do you think the second D would be?
Defer.
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 I give you a hint.
Okay.
It's defer.
Oh, okay.
Because the 1031 allows you to capture wherever you're at in the real estate cycle. And we may talk about this a little bit in just a minute, but the idea is that real estate cycles cannot be predicted, but they still always follow the same pattern. Appreciation is high, and then appreciation stagnates, and some other area starts to come on. Think about all those poor people in San Francisco Bay that sold those massively appreciated properties in Silicon Valley and went and invested in the cheap hill country of Texas around Austin just because they wanted to hang out with Elon. They went from an area of high appreciation to high cash flow, and now, of course, that appreciation is taken off. So everybody in the 1031 world is always looking for where the next place is that isn't yet. So that's the second D. All right, what do you think the third D is?
I'm going to say defer.
Yes, see, you're all over this.
Man. And
the reason why is that it doesn't just accommodate your movement within a real estate cycle. It accommodates your movement throughout your life cycle as a real estate investor. You could do what are called diversification exchanges, where you sell one and you buy multiple properties to capture maybe your energy level and wanting to force appreciation to get better cash flow on cheaper properties. As you start to mature and get tired, you can sell several and consolidate them when you want to start moving into more passive investments. Larger multifamilies, triple net commercial, those types of things where your effort is less. You could also take the opportunity, like we discussed a minute ago, to convert them periodically into your primary residence so that you're capturing, turning some of that tax-free. And what about moving your portfolio from Ohio to Sarasota if that's where you want to retire and you want your rentals in your backyard? So that's the third D, is it accommodates your life cycle. Okay, for the win, what's the fourth D?
Dave. Dave Ow. Foster, the 1031 guy.
I have never read that answer, but boy, do I like it. So I'm not going to spare you the injury of telling you that it's not deferred. And unfortunately, it's not Dave either.
I have no idea.
It's Di. Which right. is not my favorite answer. But we're all headed that way, right?
None of us get out of here alive.
Right. But here's what happens to your assets when you pass away. Your heirs inherit them at what is called a stepped-up basis. So they inherit them as if they paid market value for them on the day you die. So throughout your life, you defer, and there's all this deferred tax when you die. It disappears. You don't pay it. Your estate doesn't pay it. Your heirs get the property tax-free, and then they get to start the process over again. It's the greatest generational wealth building opportunity that's out there. Unfortunately, you and I have to die to give it away.
Die to give it away. Yeah. You don't get to take it with you. I think that's a blessing too, though. But no, you think you're right. That's amazing. I didn't realize that there at the end, the stepped up basis.
Yeah, I've literally got one family that are now on their third generation investment from Greenwich, Connecticut. The grandfather started doing exchanges with us, and he passed away a few years into it. And his son inherited all of the properties. No tax-free. But then a couple years later, guess what? He was starting to do his own 1031 exchanges because those properties had started to appreciate. And then when he passed away a couple of years ago, his properties went to his children. Mm. And now throughout this boom, they too have started to appreciate, and they are now doing their own 1031 exchanges. Can you imagine how much tax that has come down to them that's in their pockets tax-free?
That's incredibly powerful. So what about properties where people borrow money? Say you're doing a fix and flip, or say that whatever it is, you borrow money in order to improve the property. Let's call it $1 million, and you put in $250,000 in renovations, then you sell it for 1.5. I'm just making up numbers, whatever they are, sure. Doesn't matter. But how do you, and then you owe that money back, obviously, to the people you've borrowed money from when that property closes. You're only paying tax, of course, on the gain, that 250 right. gain.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the way the IRS accounts for that is that they tell you that if you want to defer all tax, you need to do two things. You need to purchase at least as much real estate as you sold. So in our example, that would be the 1.5.
Right.
Secondly, you need to use all of your proceeds from the sale to do that. So, you know, let's say you borrowed $750 to buy it.
Right.
Plus the $250 to renovate it, so there's $1 million.
Right.
So you sold it for 1.5. The $1 million gets paid back, and you're left with $500,000 in cash and the need to buy at least 1.5 in real estate.
Right.
Now, if you want to grow up in size, that's no problem at all, is it? You go find a big asset. What if you want to get more? Well, you take those proceeds and you allocate them into down payments on multiple properties.
Okay.
Put $250 down on a couple different properties or whatever it is that you want to do. And that's how powerful that can be, because the IRS doesn't care how you allocate it. As long as at the end of the day, you've purchased at least as much as you sold and you've used all the proceeds to do it. Now, here's an incredible hack to recession-proof your portfolio using this exact principle. Let's say you've got a property for, you're selling for $500,000 and there's $200,000 in debt. You sell the property, you've got $300,000 in cash. You could take $250,000, let's say, and go buy a $250,000 property for cash.
Right.
Quite clear. Take the other $50,000 and go buy the $250,000 property using that as a down payment. So you sold one, you bought two, but some magical things happen. First of all, you want an asset that's free and clear. So you don't have to worry about except just keeping the lights on. It's free of mortgage risk. It's free of being taken from you if the market downturns, whatever. But also, all of that equity is trapped in it. So that, like right now, when we're in 7% interest rate world, you don't have to worry about paying interest while you wait for your next project. Let's say a couple of years from now, interest rates are back down to 3%. You slap a refinance on that. Pull out the bulk of that $250,000. And then go use that to buy your next acquisition target. But meanwhile, it hasn't been costing you anything. But you were still able to defer all the tax on the gain because you used the other $50,000 and used it as leverage to go buy your second property. That's a pretty neat way.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's one thing I didn't realize as well, is that you can split those down payments on several properties. Is there any regulation around all of those properties being owned inside the same entity or the same name, or does it not matter?
Yeah, actually it does. And that's just one of the basic rules of 1031, is that the taxpayer for the property that's being sold has to be the taxpayer for the properties that are purchased. Now, any taxpaying entity can do a 1031 exchange, but it's whatever tax return reports that. Now, a lot of people love to practice liability, reduction, that kind of thing. So they like to own their properties in LLCs. And in certain states, series LLCs, where there's a parent LLC that does file its own tax return, and then children and child LLCs that don't. Those are very common. As long as those children LLCs don't file their own tax return, they're going to be reported on the tax return of the parent LLC. And in the IRS world, that's the same taxpayer because it's that tax return. So you could sell the one, buy a property in Dayton, Ohio, free and clear, under an Ohio LLC, and go buy an Alabama property using leverage, using an Alabama LLC, both of which are owned by the parent LLC. So plenty of ways to practice liability deferral as well.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Very, very cool. Dave, it's been a pleasure having you come back on the show today. You always give some insightful nuances to the 1031 exchange. I know that you've recently put out a book. Before we sign off here, can you tell our listeners about that book and the best way to get a copy of it?
Yeah, it's right out there on Amazon. It's called Lifetime Tax-Free Wealth, A Real Estate Investor's Guide to the 1031 Exchange. And I love how you couched this early on in the show, where you talked about the rules and the do's and the don'ts. I thought that's what I was writing. But at the end of it, when I looked at it, I went, this is really more of a roadmap for how to strategically reach your life goals using the government's tax dollars. So it's really more strategy and designed to fit your desires than it is just a paint by the numbers 1, 2, 3 kind of thing. But I had fun. We do a lot of case studies in it. People like I was just talking about, my story, several others, because I think out there, there's always a way to do this, and there's always a way to do it using the government's dollars, and I guarantee you, that'll be faster.
I love it. Dave, thank you again for coming on the show today. We know how to get your book. Outside of that, what is the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you or your company and learn more about you?
Stop by the1031investor.com. I've got a 37-part YouTube series talking about all these kinds of things. We've got calculators. We've got ways to contact and talk to us directly. And we get bored if we don't have people listening. So come on.
That's fantastic. The1031investor.com. Dave, thank you again for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.